Hello, I'm Dr. Mack, Tom McIntyre, Professor of Special Education at Hunter College in New York City, and you're listening to one of the podcasts from BehaviorAdvisor.com. Today I wanted to share a personal experience that influenced me greatly and to which we can apply much of what we know about teaching kids we sometimes refer to as being hardened or tough. Our kids with conduct disorders, social maladjustment, and the street corner mentality. In my mind, working with kids who have the label ED or BD is like trying to make headway in a gale force wind. You can make progress, but it's slow. You sometimes slip and even get pushed backwards, and sometimes you get struck unexpectedly by something. As a long-term teacher in self-contained classrooms for kids with psychological and behavioral issues, I usually found that I had been deputized to keep my students away from the village that I thought was supposed to raise them. My personal history in the classroom is, according to my grad students that I now teach, still common, teaching in poorly funded, under-supported programs in which getting through the bureaucracy to obtain supplies, materials, services is like mating elephants. It's done at a very high level. There's lots of bellowing and screaming, and it takes about 2 years to get results. And sometimes you're crushed by the outcome. Even at the classroom level, the system was often broken and non-supportive. Oftentimes, our students would be mainstreamed back into general education classes, only to have their bolstered self-esteem and newfound motivation shattered by ill-natured, cantankerous instructors, I refuse to call them teachers, who seized the opportunity to strike back and hurt these students who represented the ones who once hurt them. These instructors engaged in the same behaviors that they punished when kids displayed them: bullying, teasing, ridiculing, and gossiping. One victim now hurting another. Perhaps if they'd known the background of the kids they disliked, sympathy, empathy, and support would have surfaced. There's an old Hebrew proverb that I think is still said by old Hebrews. If we could read the secret history of those we'd like to punish, we would find in each life enough pain and sorrow to wish no further harm upon them. I knew their backgrounds. I would read the files of my soon-to-arrive students and feel my heart sink. I remember growing up as a child, which, by the way, is the best time to grow up, when my biggest concern was having my friends laugh at the weird sandwiches my mom would send to school with me each day. Whatever was left over from last night's supper would be present in between two pieces of Wonder Bread, my crumpled, bleeding, brown paper bag reflecting the broccoli, the mashed turnips, cream corn, and all kinds of yucky stuff that I had managed to avoid the night before. And on the one day when I brought in my hard-earned allowance to purchase a tray of cafeteria near food, I was the recipient of an eye-opening, jaw-dropping, incapacitating wedgie from the bullies who then pried the coins from my clenched hands. In my mind, I was a decorated veteran of childhood. I thought I'd experienced it all. However, as I read through the social histories of my future students, it seemed as if they had grown up on a whole nother planet. Their experiences were that foreign when compared to my supposed agony. Typically, the files contained heart-wrenching stories of upheaval and anguish. Jacinto was one such history. While dramatic, it wasn't all that different from those of my other students over the years. At age 16, Jacinto lived with his frail grandmother. She took him in after his second long-term foster family, the ones who promised to adopt him, left him behind when they moved to another state. He was peeled away from them just like he was from the first foster home. Periodically, his drug-addicted mother and rarely present but abusive father reappeared in his life to break their new promises of lifelong commitment and protection. The special ed teacher to whom Jacinto clung for emotional support gave whatever she was able before finally giving up on him when his behavior didn't change for the better. As with the general educator before her, she was unable to manage Jacinto's angry emotional outbursts with ever-increasing penalties. The district then decided that he should be sent to a regional residential school where they could control someone like him. Well, after 6 months, his sending school recalled him because the outside placement was much too expensive. He was once again taken in by his angelic but under-equipped grandmother. His return to the district placed him in my special ed classroom most of the day. Jacinta was in a heightened state of emotional turmoil, given the fear of the death of the last person that they could locate who still wanted him, and placement with another one of those people whom he resented due to repeated bad experiences and their lack of belief in him. Teachers. Previous to Jacinto's arrival, my paraprofessional and I had been able to create a sanctuary where tough kids could let down their formidable defenses and just be kids again. Now, I got to admit, to days when my classroom was a behavioral maelstrom, days when I was so discombobulated I wanted to call 911, but I couldn't remember the number. I had to dial 411 to get the number for 911. But for the most part, our room was a place where we had developed a positive peer culture and were teaching our kids the skills that they'd never been taught. For some kids who had been neglected, it might even include self-care and hygiene. Heck, I remember the beginning of 1 year, we were tempted to label Rodney a level 3 biohazard. But by the end of the term, he was well on his way to becoming a well-groomed young man who was catching the eye of various co-eds. For the most part, though, in addition to academics, our day included instruction in anger management, self-regulation, values clarification, and social skills. Given their ingrained patterns, it took a while for the kids to learn the new ways. Change often takes time, even when surrounded by patient and supportive folks. To assure that their new and more appropriate actions were displayed, after our in-class role-playing, we shadowed them, and we whispered advice in their ears or used visual signals when we thought the opportunity presented itself where they could display the replacement behaviors that we were working on. And we'd remind them of things like, remember to wipe the booger off your finger before shaking hands with our visitor. And when Cruella ordered another student to pass the protractor, I attempted to prompt a more appropriate social decorum by saying, "What's the magic word?" She thought for a second, then she held up her fist and demanded, "No!" It was progress, though, and we promoted effort, not accuracy, knowing that motivation to keep trying would eventually bring about proficiency. We'd also work on empathy training, being able to understand and appreciate the feelings of others, which is no small task for boys whose only empathetic connection up to that point was groaning "Arr!" whenever they saw a movie character get kneed in the groin. Community service in a home for the aged was used to help develop a sense of caring. Our kids took senior citizens out for walks, whether they wanted to go or not. But back to Jacinto. As was our periodic ritual, we began to prepare our class for the entry of a new student. It was always an anxiety-filled time for our kids because roles and ranks would have to be realigned, and they feared losing some of the comfort, the prestige, the sense of community that it had developed. It was also an issue because we had a very small classroom, a typical special ed setting. As one of my students complained, "Mr. Mack, man, we ain't got no, we can't take another student. We ain't got no ass room in the classroom." And when I mentioned that the new fella's name was Jacinto, they looked at me like they'd just eaten a bad clam. It was followed with, "Man, you can't let him come in here, Mr. Mack." Tall tales, hearsay, and rumors were bandied about in excited tones. The reports mirrored what I had read in his file. Jacinto was a tall, handsome, muscular 16-year-old with a witty but caustic sense of humor. His disdain for most adults was legendary. He was described as the type of person who would wish you a happy Thanksgiving by flipping you the bird and then telling you to stuff it. Teacher reports indicated that there was a sure sign that he was going to cause trouble when he arrived at school in the morning. He'd be breathing. He was likened to behavioral popcorn. You knew when he was going to explode. You just didn't know when. He got the same disdain in return. and I think that's because disruptive kids have a contagious disease of sorts. They often bring out the same angry behavior in teachers who don't have the disciplinary antibodies to protect themselves from catching a bad case of crankiness. As was typical of kids with defiant behavior, his record showed that educators had worked long into the night to try to figure out better ways to punish him for the behavior that emanated from his traumatized soul. When detention and suspension and special placement didn't work, well, they placed him in a residential setting. And when funding for this placement was withdrawn, they were ready for his return with everything from deportation to lethal injections. His hair trigger aggression against other teens was also well documented. While he was viewed by other kids as being a leader, he was one whom you admired and feared at the same time. Tamika, a sensitive, caring gal, when she wasn't throwing punches at the speakers of real or imagined insults, was the only accepting one in the group, and with her female love of bad boys, she was probably enamored with the thought of this good-looking alpha male sitting next to her in class. She claimed that he was misunderstood and didn't have a mean bone in his body, to which Tyrese replied, "Yeah, neither do sharks." You'll get that joke later. It takes a while to fester. I like to think that Tamika's ability to separate the person from the behavior was partly a result of our hard work. We had been teaching our students to dislike the behavior, but keep believing in the other's ability to change for the better with their support. And perhaps her sentiment is best expressed by Mark Twain's famous quote, "He's a good man in the worst sense of the word." That's the end of part one, the introduction to the Jacinto experience. We'll talk about Jacinto arriving at my door and what transpired in part two.